Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
A very warm welcome to all of you to this first live session of Best Ideas 2020. It's a great pleasure to be doing this event again this year. I believe it's our seventh or eighth year in a row, something like that, and we have over 60 instructors who are presenting over the next 3 days. And we are starting off right now with one of my favorite instructors in the entire MY Global community. So it's a pleasure to introduce Sean Stannard Stockton, based in Burlingame, California. Sean is the president and chief investment officer of Ensemble Capital Management. Ensemble Capital manages $1 billion in separate accounts on behalf of high net worth families and institutions, as well as the Ensemble Fund. Prior to working at Ensemble Capital, Sean worked at Scudder Investments. He holds a BA in economics from the University of California, Davis, and the CFA designation. As many of our members will know and appreciate, Sean has shared his wisdom and ideas with us in the past, and we are truly grateful he has chosen this opportunity to be with us again. So on behalf of the MY Global membership community, a very warm welcome to you, Sean. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much, John. It's a very, very generous introduction. So thank you all for listening in. Briefly on Ensemble, to give you some context, so we're an investment management firm headquartered in between Silicon Valley and San Francisco. About 80% of our client base is private clients, about 20% institutional. We launched a mutual fund before 4.5 years ago as well. The slide here says we have $930 million in assets, but as of yesterday, we closed the books in the quarter and just barely crossed $1 billion for the first time in history. So exciting times for Ensemble. Our strategy, the core equity strategy, which represents the vast majority of our assets under management, is really focused on competitively advantaged businesses. So, you know, we're value investors at heart in the sense that we're only ever buying a stock because it trades for less than we think it's the intrinsic value of the pro rata share of the company it represents. And yet our focus is not on statistically cheap stocks or on higher growth stocks, but on businesses that have deep competitive advantages, which may exhibit growth or low growth or high growth. And we're focused on the cash flow that those businesses can produce over the long term. From a portfolio standpoint, we have a focused strategy, kind of 15 to 30 securities, and we think that is really kind of a fundamental element to long-term fundamental equity investing today. Our active share is generally over 90%. I think it's 93.5% or something right now. So across the portfolio, you see primarily businesses that have very high returns on invested capital. Booking is one of those. We'll be talking about that and the how that drives enormous amounts of cash flows as a percent of EPS and why it makes these sorts of businesses more valuable. So our kind of core philosophy, we've tried to sum up in this one chart here. In looking for businesses, there's kind of three core pillars that we require. Businesses that have a moat is the most primary element of what we're looking for. So businesses that not only have some sort of competitive advantage that protects their cash flows, but also offers products and services that we think are going to remain relevant. So in some cases, you see businesses where the moat does not degrade, but demand for the products and services degrades, and that moat becomes less and less valuable. So we're looking for kind of strong and resilient businesses and moats. We're looking for management teams that both understand kind of the value creation process. At the end of the day, we think that profit is basically the company's share of the value they create in the world on behalf of their stakeholders, primarily their customers. And that also that management team understands that with the excess cash flow that they're producing, that they have a good sense of how to deploy that for the benefit of shareholders. And then lastly, businesses that we think are forecastable. Now, of course, as equity investors, we recognize that the future is difficult to forecast. But in thinking about businesses and probably the primary reason we focus on competitively advantaged businesses is because their futures are at least to some extent in their own control, and that makes it more forecastable rather than more commodity-based businesses that are subject to the whims of demand cycle and competitors' activities. And so, you know, Booking, you'll see as we talk about today, why even the actions of Google, while disruptive to many of their kind of so-called peers, is not as disruptive to Booking as we think the market worries it is. And so, you know, as those three things come together, we're looking for all of them, and those are the businesses we find to be most investable for our strategy. So in thinking about Booking, I'm going to start with this quote from their Chinese competitor, Ctrip, CEO, saying, Booking.com is a global brand, and in hotels, they are just so far ahead of anybody else, I think it will be very difficult for anyone to come close to them. It's extremely rare for competitors to issue statements like that. Now, Booking does have partial ownership. You know, they own shares in Ctrip, and they have a partnership. And yet, I think this is just the sort of reality. Why did Ctrip create the partnership with Booking that they did? In large part because Ctrip recognized that, you know, they had this opportunity to go after in China. They have their own kind of local competitors to deal with, and that Booking basically owns the rest of the world in the segment, and we'll talk about this, it's an important element, in the segment of hotels where Booking focuses, which is not all hotels. You know, we're looking for these very dominant players and thinking about over the next 5, 10 plus years, and you think about competition, being somebody that is so far ahead of anybody else that it's difficult for anyone to come close to you is the sort of competitive advantage that we're looking for. So what is Booking? You know, it's funny. I think a lot of Americans don't even know what Booking.com is. They may even think they've never gone there, even if they've actually booked transactions there. But in Europe, it's extremely well known, which is where the majority of their business comes from. So Booking is an online travel agent that generates most of its cash flow from booking hotel rooms in Europe and Asia. So Booking owns Kayak, they own Priceline, Agoda, Rentalcars.com, and OpenTable. You know, it's interesting they say they own Priceline. This business was called Priceline as recently as about 2 years ago when we first took a position in it. So the history here is pretty interesting. Priceline, and you remember Shatner from Star Trek was the big spokesperson in the late 90s, and it was almost kind of the ultimate dot-com stock. If I have this right, it declined 99.7% from the peak of the dot-com boom into the dot-com bust. But in the early 2000s, they bought a small business called Booking.com. And over the succeeding, you know, 20 years, it's been this unbelievably high-performing stock and business, and Booking is now the major part of it. And Priceline.com still exists, but is no longer kind of, you know, the idea that this is a business that you bid on secret deals and stuff is that's the old Priceline model and has very little to do with Booking today. So 89% of the revenue of the business comes from Booking.com. 87% of all revenue comes from hotels and alternative accommodations. Now, interesting, 20% of that comes from alternatives. So you think about Airbnb, most people have never gone to Booking.com to reserve a vacation home. And Airbnb, you know, at least from a consumer mind standpoint, owns that space. I mean, myself included, I obviously know Booking very well. And yet, you know, if I'm going to go someplace with the family or with friends and want to rent a vacation home, my first thought is go to Airbnb. Interestingly, they've kind of split the market in different ways. So when Booking said, I believe it was a year ago, that they had 20% of their revenue coming from alternative, you could calculate that they were only a year behind Airbnb in terms of revenue. And yet, it's a very distinctive difference in that Airbnb, you know, if you use their service, you know that it is mostly homes owned by a person who you're renting the home from, whereas the alternative accommodations available on Booking tend to be more focused on corporate managed alternative accommodations. So I did stay in one of these. I traveled, drove into the Southwest over the summer and stopped in Vegas overnight and stayed in what was considered an alternative accommodation. It basically was a large condo complex that each condo was owned by an individual, but the management of the entire building rented out vacant spaces on behalf of the owners through Booking.com. And so their alternative accommodations tends to be more like kind of corporate managed alternatives as opposed to individually managed. And yet this is obviously an important, you know, growth space. And they say that's growing faster than overall. Large majority of hotel revenue comes from outside the United States, while Expedia generates the majority of its from inside the United States. So you might be familiar with the old quote that if you're not paying for it, you're not the customer, you're the product being sold. And this concept is really applicable when thinking about booking. So while you as a traveler might think of yourself as their customer, from a business model standpoint, travelers are the product that booking is selling to hotels. So hotel rooms are kind of a form of perishable inventory. If a hotel room is left empty for the night, that night can never be sold again in the future. So if you think about kind of the expected value of a hotel room, you know, it decays with time and rapidly falls to zero as you get closer and closer to the night in question. And so for this reason, hotels want to maintain as high of an occupancy rate as possible without driving down their average room rate. So that's why the hotel industry focuses more on the metric referred to as a RevPAR rather than ADRs. So ADR is the average daily rate of a room, while RevPAR is the average daily rate times the occupancy rate. And that's what matters to hotels, right? And so to maximize revenue, they need to balance this tension between getting the highest rate per night alongside generating the highest possible occupancy rate. And the fact is that for branded hotels like Hilton and Marriott and Hyatt, generating demand for their rooms is very much in their own control. They have globally recognized brands, they have a large number of people who are members of their loyalty programs, and this gives them a direct relationship with their customers. But independent hotels don't have either of those. So to drive demand, they must actively market themselves, the independent hotels, and yet they don't typically have the resources or the expertise to do so. And this is what booking provides. So while it might seem to travelers to be a search engine for hotels, really, booking provides marketing services on commission, so a pay-for-performance basis, and the two independent hotels, and this is a really valuable service to hotels who don't have those internal capabilities. I mean, you have to create demand to rent a hotel, obviously. So one more thing before we move on, during this presentation, I'm gonna refer to online travel agents as OTAs, and I'll also talk about metasearch. So metasearch are sites that search lots of other sites. So the OTAs, like booking, actually book travel reservations and earn a commission in exchange for that. Whereas metasearch is an ad-based model that charges a per-click fee for sending traffic to OTAs or to hotels or airlines themselves where the traveler can then book a reservation. Okay, so this brings us to this slide showing the relative global distribution of branded hotels versus independents. And as you can see, while branded hotels are dominant in the United States, independent hotels are more common around the rest of the world. And in the chart on the right, you can see how while branded hotels do get bookings from OTAs like Booking, independent hotels are really dependent on OTAs. So if you're visiting New York, you might just go to the website of Hilton or Hyatt or Marriott.com and pick one of their New York-based hotels. But if you're visiting Milan or Bangkok or Cartagena, Colombia, where I went with my family last year, you're almost certainly going to use an OTA. And so in Europe in particular, Booking is the dominant OTA. And when, as I mentioned earlier, while many Americans may not have even heard of Booking, in Europe, it's extremely widely known, which is one reason why over half of Booking's transactions come from people who started their search not on Google or some other search service, but came directly to Booking's website or app. And the traffic that is coming direct is growing faster than the traffic that is coming through other channels. So speaking of Cartagena, this is a really beautiful city that reminds you of why traveling is one of life's really greatest pleasures. This is a screenshot from Google Maps on my iPhone from when I was there last summer. And while we didn't stay at Hostel Mamaieia ourselves, we caught a tour bus from the hostel to Playa Blanca. It's really one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. And I used Google Maps to find my way from my hotel to the hostel to catch the bus. And as you can see, Google Maps displays an option to book a room at the hostel. But this option is really a link to booking.com. It's a booking.com ad. So you click on that, then Google gets paid ad dollars, but Booking will get the reservation. So while a similar screenshot for a branded hotel in the US would likely show a link to the hotel's own website, independent hotels to a large extent leave online marketing to OTA partners like Booking. In general, in the US and elsewhere, you may see multiple options, but in areas with a hotel like this, that's not a giant organization, they may only have one option available. So while branded rooms are the norm outside the United States, it is true that most newly built hotels are being built by hotel brands. So the black columns are the percent of current rooms that are part of branded hotels, with the light blue is the percent of planned new rooms being developed that are branded. But as you can see, the hotel room growth isn't very robust outside of Asia. So in the more mature US and European hotel markets, branded and independent hotels are both growing at low single digit sorts of rates. So it'll literally take decades for the market share of branded rooms to dominate, even if the share of new rooms is 90% branded. But in the more emerging Asian markets, while branded hotels are growing much faster, right, so 14% CAGR over the last decade, even independent hotels are growing at a very solid 5% rate. So it provides lots of growth opportunity for Booking. But what about the monster we call Google? So if you follow the travel business at all, you know that Google is a super important player. At Ensemble, we've been shareholders of Google for years, and Google and Booking are each one of our largest positions. And we agree that the company is going to keep devouring as much of the travel industry profit pool as it can. But Google is already the biggest player in the online travel industry. So as we talk through this section, remember that an OTA earns a commission for booking a reservation, while Metasearch earns click dollars for sending traffic to OTAs and hotels. Okay, so according to the travel industry research group, Skift, which if you follow the travel industry, we really think this is kind of one of the very best industry sources to follow. They say that they believe that Google is not becoming an online travel agency. Now, this is 2017, although they have not changed their tune about this. And Booking is this OTA. Google certainly could do so, but its travel business is already massive and highly profitable. They estimated that it'll generate around $14 billion in revenue in 2017 when we made these statements, and will grow at over 20% per year for the foreseeable future. So travel is one of Google's very largest industries in terms of the demand for their advertising, and Booking, as the biggest buyer of travel ads, is one of Google's largest customers and may well be the very largest. So if you think about kind of the growth from the estimates 2017, you're talking about 2019 travel industry revenues for Google, say $15 to $20 billion. You put like a 6x multiple, that's just Google sales multiple overall approximately, and you get a travel advertising market cap of $90 to $120 billion, or 10 to 13% of Google's market cap. And so it's just important to recognize that while the market is concerned that Google is going to disintermediate their customers that advertise with Google, that this, in fact, may well be Google's most important demand center, and if not the most important, very close to it. Okay, so how does Google make money from travel if they aren't a travel agency? So it's the same way they make almost all of their money, right, selling advertisements. So if you search for hotels in Koh Tao, Thailand, which is a beautiful vacation island I visited a couple years ago, these are the ads that you'll see. Now, notice that each of the ads is coming from a travel agency or another travel ad-based business. So all four of these ads are from Booking or Expedia, because Expedia owns Hotels.com and Booking owns Kayak. So further down the page is the organic search results. So notice that these links, too, are not they're not hotel links, right? The hotels on the island of Koh Tao do not employ internet advertising experts to build out highly trafficked websites that have been optimized for search engines. I mean, that's just not at all the situation there. But the online travel companies do, so their sites come up first. And notice that these links are from TripAdvisor and Expedia, so Booking actually doesn't show up in this search. Now, you would think that the best company would be the ones getting free organic traffic, not the ones like Booking that pay Google for advertising links. But as you'll see, it's paid traffic that is key to the Booking investment thesis. But if you search for hotels more recently, and this is kind of the crux of the disruption that's going on, you may still see some of the ads that we saw a moment ago, but the organic links are now much further down the page, making room for this new ad module called Google Hotels. So this is a new search tool specifically for hotels. So many travel industry companies who invested heavily in optimizing their website to attract free organic traffic from Google hate this new search product. They complain it's advertising based rather than truly just listing the best organic search results. That's how they would characterize it. So when a user clicks into these search results, they will still see links to travel companies like Booking, just as we saw the Google Maps listing for Hostel Mama Yaya. But now all of the links are ads that hotels or online travel companies need to pay Google for each click on. So now the Google monster is really coming after travel. A couple of months ago, after Google started aggressively rolling out this feature and optimizing it, the travel companies collectively announced earnings and said that the amount of free organic traffic that they were receiving from Google was falling. So this news caused TripAdvisor and Expedia to fall about 20 to 30%. While Booking also fell about 7%, this drop came based on TripAdvisor and Expedia's results, which came out prior to Booking's results. Booking's own results were not nearly as negative. So let's walk through what the companies all said about the changes that Google was making. Now, keep in mind, when the executives say SEO, they mean search engine optimization or the organic search. You know, SEM or search engine marketing is ads. They're not going to mention that here, but just so you have the terminology. So here's TripAdvisor's CEO. He says, it's always hard to know exactly what Google's doing. This SEO piece is an ongoing trend, and we're not predicting that it's going to turn around. We don't see any reason to think that the trends will be different in terms of Google continue to take more and more space in the search results. And here's Expedia. I think Google continues to experiment with new products. I think where we see the biggest impact is when those products ultimately take away real estate from what was traditionally free channels. Generally, the trend is that Google does continue to push for more revenue per visitor. And I think it's just the reality where the world is in the internet and the importance of Google at the top of the funnel. Now note how different the messaging from Booking is. Headwinds in the SEO channel did create some modest pressure, but it's a small channel for us. We built this company on pay for performance to begin with, and it's no secret that we did it with Google, and Google and us have had a very good relationship together. We've both benefited tremendously. So TripAdvisor and Expedia are lamenting that the new Google Hotel product is reducing the number of people who click on those free links and increasing the number who come via paid advertisement links on Google. But Booking doesn't really care about this dynamic because unlike Expedia and TripAdvisor that depend on these free links for much of their earnings power, Booking was built from the beginning on a business model which focused on paying Google for traffic. So in this slide put together by the research group Cowen & Company, you can see that both because of the relatively small amount of traffic that Booking gets from free links, and just as importantly, due to the high profit margins that Booking generates, providing room for them to profitably pay Google for traffic, Booking has much less exposure in terms of their earnings power coming from free links. In the right-hand column, Cowen estimates that TripAdvisor's profits are almost entirely dependent on free links, and Expedia accounts them for about half their earnings. Well, for Booking, they drive about 15% of the company's earnings. So the interesting thing is that travel companies that depend on organic search tend to imply that paid advertising links are somehow bad, while free organic search links are good, right? And this view is based on this idea that travelers are being tricked by advertisements and that the free organic links point to what is truly best. But this is a screenshot from the website Scott's Cheap Flights, which is a site dedicated to helping travelers get the cheapest and best airline tickets. Google Flights is a nearly identical product to Google Hotels, but for airfare, and it's been around for years. So we can see how this sort of search product actually works out. According to Scott's, Google Flights, despite being an ad-based product, is not tricking travelers into following paid links, while free organic links point to the better results. Instead, Scott's calls Google Flights one of their favorite search engines, calling it the most powerful, easy to use, and with features that make airfare hunting easier. So we think Google Hotels is similar. It's a fantastic product. Travelers aren't shifting away from free organic links to paid links inside of the hotel search engine because they're being tricked or because their organic links are now further down the page. I mean, anyone can just very slightly, you know, scroll on your phone or your mouse and move down to those organic links if that's what's actually best for you. They're using Google Hotels because it's better. So here's a different way to think about the relationship between online travel companies, Google, and travelers from the venture capitalist Chamath Palihapitiya. If you are a business that thrives inside of this Google environment, you are screwed. Ratably, tick for tick, every single person that feeds off of them will see their profitability erode. That's the unvarnished truth of what's happening. If you are in the business of being a parasite on top of Google, your medium and long-term prospects are terrible. You are an impaired company, even though you don't know it. So Booking is not a parasite on top of Google. They are one of Google's very largest customers. They built their business not on the premise that they deserve to get free traffic from the amazing innovative search engine that Google has blessed the world with. It was Google, after all, that had made finding hotels online all around the globe possible. And then they put the low-cost smartphone in the hands of billions of people. And yet somehow they're the monster for getting paid for creating the near magical ability for anyone around the planet to find information at no cost. I mean, why in the world would anyone think they deserve to receive traffic from this system for free? So bottom line, we think Booking and Google are engaging in co-opetition. So don't get the impression that we think Google's moves in travel will have no negative effect on Booking, or that Booking is guaranteed to keep growing their prodigious cash flow in the years ahead at the same rate they have in the past. But we do think that it is a competitively advantaged company that deserves a place in our investors' portfolio. Okay, so here's a chart of the company's EBITDA over the past 20 years. So while the future and not the past obviously is what matters, it isn't like the past Google was uninterested in generating advertising dollars, right? So, I mean, if you follow Google for as long as us, you know that the advertisers and companies have regularly complained that you know they're being forced to pay more and more to Google for traffic. So it's not like this is a brand new innovation or brand new style of disruption. One of the things that we've heard from people who have provided us pushback on our thesis is that if you go to say Google in Europe today and search for a hotel in a European city, you will see a whole bunch of different options. It's not like Booking is the only game in town. However, that was true before Google Hotels. I mean, we saw that in Koh Tao, Thailand, it wasn't that Booking was the only option. There was multiple different options. And so we're not suggesting that somehow, you know, Booking is the only place to gain access to those hotels. We're not suggesting that they are just completely locked in with their customers. We're just saying that the incremental changes of the Google Hotels search product has a minimal impact on Booking, while it has a rather dramatic impact on their peers. And because the history of Booking has been for such unbelievably strong economics, we think that an incremental degradation from Google Hotels is not the risk that investors seem to be thinking it is based on the what we think is a very cheap valuation for Booking today. So speaking of the valuation, let's finish up with some kind of basic valuation work here. So Booking Holdings, it's a little bit above $2,050 a share today, just slightly. They make significant investments in other companies. I mentioned ownership stakes that they have in Ctrip in China, Meituan, the more recent Chinese travel company that they have an investment in. They have a range of these sorts of investments. So there's about $100 a share on the balance sheet of these sorts of investments. There's another $50 a share or so of what we deem to be excess cash. Now, of course, and, you know, each investor needs to make their own conclusions about what portion of cash is operating, but Booking has spent the last year buying back an enormous amount of stock, if I'm remembering correctly, about 10% of the share count. And so it's quite clear they have a fair bit of excess cash. The price to consensus forward earnings after backing out that $150 is about 17 times. This assumes a consensus, you know, 3 or 4 revenue estimate of about 9%. And earnings growth about 15%, so you can maybe a little margin lift and also the buybacks. Now, keep in mind that currency headwinds and the generally widely understood macro slowdown crimped the 2019 results. So if you back out the significant currency headwinds, they still produced a high single-digit revenue growth rate in 2019, despite us knowing that there was a significant macro slowdown. And so if you look at kind of the reported numbers, you'll see what appears to be a very abrupt slowdown in 2019. We believe this has nothing to do with the changes that Google is making and has to do with currency and macro aspects. The company has also been systematically optimizing their marketing spend, attempting to spend less on ads and more on brand marketing so they can drive more and more direct business. Because, you know, despite everything I've just said, it's even better if people come straight to them and they don't have to pay Google anything, right? And so those things have slowed some of their growth in 2019. But again, we think it's a relatively temporary slowdown. It doesn't mean that it's going to return to kind of the 2015 to 2018 growth rates when revenue grew 16% a year and earnings grew 23% a year. But we do think that, you know, they have very significant growth ahead, and those forward consensus estimates we don't think is far off, and we know it's not far off from our own estimates. So let's assume, let's think about what is the terminal value of this business, meaning, you know, once growth slows to kind of GDP sort of level. So this is the math and kind of backs into or kind of simply explains our own analysis of what this business is worth in a terminal state. So they have a 100% plus returns on tangible invested capital. So, you know, they make some acquisitions, but Xing that out, and you need to X that out unless you are assuming ongoing M&A activity, which we are not in our growth expectations, since those will not be repeatable sources of capital that need funding. But 100% plus returns on tangible invested capital, you really just don't need to invest much to grow this business other than investing through the income statement, which is managed through margins, obviously. So assume they grow 5% in their terminal state, 50% of the reinvestment required to fund that sort of 5% growth is funded by their A-minus rated low-cost debt, right? So brings their cost of capital down even more. So they're only going to need to reinvest that 2.5% of their earnings to grow 5%. Basically, 2.5% at 100% ROIC gets you 2.5%. You fund the other half of it with debt, and it leaves 97.5% of their earnings distributed to cash to shareholders. So, you know, to get kind of a 9% expected rate of return, you need a 4% distribution yield and 5% growth. So to get to that, based on that sort of, you know, almost 100% ability to distribute earnings to shareholders, you know, gets you to about a 28 times PE ratio in 5 years. That we think the business is currently worth over $3,000 a share, or a PE in kind of the mid to high 20s level. It's interesting, if you go back and look at the long-term history of Google, the long-term history of Booking, you'll see, you know, P ratios have reached that level, but they've tended to be lower than that on average. And so you might say, well, then why would you expect the P to be kind of above average in the future? But we now know in retrospect that the stock dramatically outperformed from those previously lower P ratios in the past. So in retrospect, we know that the market was systematically undervaluing the business in the past. And so if you use those kind of past average multiples to constrain what you think it'll be worth in the future, you're basically constraining yourself to an assumption that the stock will keep outperforming. So yes, if it's only trading at 20 times earnings or whatever, that's okay. We'd keep owning it. We'd expect it to keep outperforming over the longer term. Okay, so in closing, Google's one of the most important companies in history. They've brought ubiquitous access to information to the hands of people all around the globe. And we think that Google is going to continue to profit handsomely from their services, even while they continue to deliver the very best possible search results to users. And so the changes they're making to their search engine might feel monstrous if you're a parasite used to feeding off of Google's innovation. But if you have a business built on working inside of the Google paid ecosystem, you're in fine shape. So like every company, the last thing Google wants to do is drive their own biggest customers out of business. Now, thank you so much for listening. We have a couple disclosure slides here, and then I'd love to turn it over to questions from John and the audience. Thank you so much.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for this presentation. To all of you on the line, if you do have a question for Sean, feel free to type it into the online interface at this time. And Sean, maybe I'll just start with a question that I have. As you know, I'm based in Switzerland, and I've used Booking many, many times, probably more than a couple hundred times, and I don't even go to Google anymore. I just go straight to Booking. They have genius discounts, as they call them, and all kinds of loyalty features. And I'm just wondering, do we know what percentage of the business is people who go directly to the site at this point?
So over 50% of the transactions that occur in Booking occur from people who came directly to Booking's websites or their app. They've been saying over 50% for, I think they first said that, I believe it was like 18 months ago, and they've been saying that it's growing faster, but not indicating how much faster. So it's something north of 50%.
So that's obviously very significant, I would say.
Yeah, and so I think that one of the really important things, if you think about the branded hotels and why do the branded hotels, why are they not so dependent on the OTAs? So I showed the chart that showed how much less of their rooms are booked via OTAs. But the other thing is that the branded hotels have negotiated lower commission rates. The branded hotels lower commission rates with the OTAs compared to independent hotels, right? They just have more bargaining power, basically. But what the branded hotels have is a relationship with customers. So not only kind of a mindshare relationship, but they have loyalty programs, right? And so if you're, say, a business traveler, and an important kind of little tidbit about Booking is that they really don't tap that much into the business marketplace. I mean, so a small firm like my own might have a, you know, somebody who's traveling who uses Booking to book something, but larger companies need to kind of travel management. And so Booking is, and the OTAs in general are not, you know, that's not their biggest space. But if you look at, you know, again, somebody who's traveling, going to New York, it's not just that they say, oh yeah, I know Marriott, I'll try Marriott. It's that, oh, this is what I do. I'm part of the loyalty program. I want to stay there again and get a free night. And so they've created that sort of ongoing loyalty and kind of created switching costs in a way for somebody who goes regularly to Marriott to use a different hotel because they won't be able to use their loyalty points or to gain new ones. So Booking has something called Booking Genius. Are you a member of that, John?
I am, and it makes me feel good.
Good, good. I'm glad you are, because if you use it a couple hundred times, then it'd be well worth your time, right? And so they have their own kind of loyalty program. Two things that Booking may do over the longer term is more kind of fully develop their loyalty program. You know, it's not all that visible right now. I don't think that as a user myself that its rewards are kind of at the same sort of level of attractiveness as kind of the branded hotels. But they could develop that even more. The other thing is that Booking could develop their own hotel brand. So Oyo, O-Y-O, is kind of one of the fastest growing, highest market cap private companies in India. And what they're doing is they're going out to all these little tiny independent hotels. These are hotels that, you know, I don't know the exact average room night, but you're talking about like $15 a night, sort of thing. So not the kind of typical Booking transaction. And Oyo is kind of rolling all of this up. They're not buying them. They're just engaging with these hotels and saying, you know, we'll create the demand aggregation. You need to live up to our standards of you know, quality, and we'll be able to send you traffic. So, you know, Booking and possibly TripAdvisor could create some sort of hotel virtual brand. You know, not launch their own hotels. That would be hugely capital intensive. Not something we would support at all. But basically, you know, creating something where you might say like independent hotel by Booking, or independent hotel a Booking hotel, or you know, any of those sorts of things. TripAdvisor, which we don't have an interest in. I love the product as a user. I think it's fantastic for when you travel internationally. If you go to Latin America and Asia, hotels and accommodations, all those sorts of things will, you know, beg you to put reviews on TripAdvisor. It's very important for them. They have their Traveler Choice Awards, and you could create a Traveler's Choice brand. So, you know, in the longer term, you know, some of the things to continue to double down on this direct traffic is to not only have people come, but to cultivate that more and more. And we'd love to see that become a much bigger portion, because obviously the less they can pay Google, the better, right? I mean, it's we're not saying it's a good thing that they're paying Google, just that it protects them from competition.
I'll take a question from the queue. It says, how does the low frequency but high value nature of a travel purchase impair Booking's ability to cultivate direct traffic? Branded hotel groups a much bigger share of pipeline than the current system, and this seems to be true of all regions. So does the fragmentation argument ultimately diminish? Take rate has remained very stable. What do you expect it to do going forward, and what are the key drivers?
Okay, a lot of different pieces to that. I would say that as far as the frequency, it's an important point. So, you know, when you are generally going to have higher loyalty for any product that you purchase frequently. So think about something like, you know, consumer staples. One of the reasons that people don't switch brands is they go every week. It's just, it's habitual, right? And so, you know, if somebody uses booking.com for the first time and has a great experience and says that was fantastic, but then they don't book a hotel for another year, they may have forgotten all about Booking. And so even though Booking delivers a great experience, they just might not have the kind of the memory in a way, right? In China, you're seeing the development of super apps. So Meituan had kind of, you know, Ctrip was like the dominant player in China. Meituan kind of exploded out of nowhere in many ways and now books more rooms than Ctrip does, although Meituan kind of focuses more on rural areas of China and much lower ADR sorts of hotels, and Ctrip focuses more on kind of developed China and the sorts of hotels that you would typically see on Booking. But what Meituan is also involved, you can use the Meituan app to book a ride-sharing service, to have food delivered, a whole range of stuff. And so the attractive thing about the super app is it creates an environment in which the user is coming back to the app very regularly, even if they're not traveling very regularly. And so they create that that sort of loyalty and habit. Now, Booking has been talking about this, the connected trip, and they're making efforts to go in that direction. I don't think that we've seen any kind of strong evidence that they are succeeding in that, but this is a long-term process. And one of the things about having a kind of a connected trip, so there's a business called TripIt, and Google Trips is now available, where you can basically load all of your travel itinerary into it. And it's, you know, with Google, it kind of tracks Gmail and assembles your itinerary on the fly just based on the emails that you're getting, which sounds like an amazing service. The problem is that if it's not 100% right, if the connected trip is not 100% connected, it basically breaks down and it doesn't have much value. So I personally used TripIt and then tried Google Trips a couple times. But as soon as you have kind of like one error in your itinerary, you're like, well, that doesn't help, right? And so for the kind of connected trip app to work well, it needs to be extremely seamless. I have noticed the most recent time that I personally used Booking, in the days ahead of arriving at the hotel, I started getting notices from Booking saying, like, you're looking forward to your trip. Here's some restaurants near the hotel if you'd like to book a reservation. Here's some attractions you might be interested in. If you need a rental car, here you go. Now, the OTAs have been doing this sort of thing generally for a long time, but Booking in particular has allowed all of its kind of sub products to operate very independently, and they're now trying to kind of stitch those together in more ways. So there's no way to overcome the kind of infrequent elements of travel as the question asked about, but super apps and kind of creating connected trips and other ways to bring all this together may drive higher frequency of the overall service, even if travel doesn't increase some. I went on there for a bit, and I know there was like six or seven different questions in there. I know the other one that I'll address, and then we can move on, is about kind of the pipeline. So the point about the pipeline, let's go back to that slide. Let's see here. Okay, so this is the share of branded hotels. So let's look at Europe. Remember, Europe is the majority. So in Europe, you have 40% in branded hotels, so 60% is independent, but that's reversed for the new pipeline. However, look at the growth rate of branded hotels in Europe. It's 3%. And independent hotels, it's about 3%. Now, this is over time. If the branded continues to take, 60, say two-thirds of that growth, you might have branded growing at 2% and independents growing at 1%. So you have a 1% shift in market share. Well, it's going to take a very, very long time before you have any big change in the dynamics with such a small, slow shift to branded. So, in 20 years, might the economics be different? Well, sure. That's why businesses in general see a degradation of their competitive advantages over time. So it's not to say that, 100 years from now, they're completely competitively positioned. But the good thing about Booking is they've been a business that has really, I think, been smart about understanding the economics of their own business. They're widely understood to be kind of the very best at conversion. So if you talk to people at Google admire Booking a lot for their ability to convert traffic. And interestingly, you saw one of the senior heads of marketing from Google about a year ago leave to become Booking's CMO. And the thing that's so interesting about that is that in his prior position at Google, he would certainly have understood and known about Google Hotels and the longer term strategy. And so while certainly him, may have done it for lots of different reasons, maybe Booking just paid him a whole lot more. But one way or another, it's hard to believe that he made that switch thinking that, Google's just about to kill Booking, but I think I'll go over there for a higher paycheck or something like that. So there will be some slow degradation of the independent versus branded mix. That's more relevant in Asia, but there's still significant growth opportunity for independents, as we show in the slide here, that has that 5% growth rate of independent hotels in the Asia Pacific region.
And what do you see Airbnb's role as being over the long term? Is that a different market? And you know, at what rate could Airbnb take a share?
So, you know, when Airbnb comes public, we'll be excited to check it out as a potential investment for ourselves. I mean, I think it's a great, great business. From a user experience, the interface we think is really superior to everybody else. Like, you know, just being able to go to an Airbnb and search and see the accommodations. You know, when you are booking a Marriott hotel, you don't need to inspect all the photos and understand exactly what it is. You know what you're going to get. Right, that's why these brands exist. But with Airbnb, every single property is unique, and so because of that, just because you went to Airbnbs in the past doesn't give you any confidence that your next Airbnb is going to be exactly the right one, and therefore you must actually really kind of inspect it and use reviews and all of that. And we think Airbnb does a great, great job at that. We think Airbnb is successful long term. They'll certainly make some efforts as they have. They bought a little business called Hotel Tonight that specializes in last minute hotel bookings. And, you know, I'm sure Airbnb will make some inroads into hotels for sure. But Booking's making great inroads into alternative accommodations. And so, you know, I think that they will compete. Airbnb will be a fierce competitor, but this is not new, right? This has been going on for quite some time, and we know that Booking reacted appropriately and now has 20% of the revenue from alternative accommodations and is only 1 year behind Airbnb in terms of the amount of revenue they're generating from alternative accommodations. So, you know, we think both businesses likely succeed over the long term. And then as far as kind of the cannibalization of hotels from alternative accommodations, I mean, there must be some, right? And yet, in my own experience, and I think, you know, when we talk to people, they're different use cases in a sense, right? So, you know, occasionally you might have somebody who's flying into the city just for one night and says, gosh, you know, forget a hotel, just get an Airbnb. But there's this kind of a seamlessness and ease of hotels and checking in and checking out where if what you're wanting is just going someplace and just, you know, having a place to sleep while you go out and explore a city or do business or whatever it might be, hotels are the better fit for that. Whereas, you know, for myself, traveling a lot with my family, you know, if we're wanting a kind of more local experience and we want to hang around the accommodation, you know, say we're on vacation, then Airbnb might be a great option, right? And so there's some overlap, but in most cases, we think they're kind of addressing different need sets of the traveler.
There's a question on capital allocation and what you think it looks like in the future. The questioner says the M&A track record looks somewhat mixed with OpenTable. Will they likely do marquee acquisitions or just continue to shrink the share count?
So I believe it is correct. It's very difficult to kind of directly measure in an objective way just how successful, you know, their acquisitions have been collectively. OpenTable, they wrote down, it was clearly the kind of the mistake in the decisions. Other investments that they've made have certainly not been written down and have increased in value. And but, you know, I think that what you're seeing right now is that the business creates this enormous amount of cash. They have the ability to use debt. We think that cash, you know, most recently they deployed, you know, a significant amount to buying back stock, not only just on a short-term basis, but relentlessly, and indicating they're going to continue for the next year or two. And so we would expect that, especially if the stock kind of stays around these levels or you know, doesn't appreciate rapidly, that they'll continue to buy back stock. We think that, you know, given our sense of the fair value, they should kind of follow the stock higher if it goes that way and continue retiring shares at this level. And they'll do other acquisitions. And we think that those would certainly be important, especially if they're for competitive strategic reasons, right? And so the travel technology ecosystem is super complex with tons of cross holdings and partnerships and these things are all important. It brings to mind one quick story. Trivago is an online kind of meta search product that Expedia owns most of, or the majority of, I believe. A year and a half ago, Booking came out and said that they were going to kind of optimize their advertising spend. And one of the things they did was stop advertising on Trivago, and Trivago's stock plummeted. was interesting about that to us is that booking is kind of the lifeblood of a lot of the travel ad businesses. And so one of the things, being the biggest bidder in an auction-based ad market, is that you need to be sensitive to how your own spending may set market prices. And so if you are aggressively spending, you may prop up the entire market price, which hurts yourself as much as anybody else, if not more so. And so Booking has just been very smart about kind of moving in and out of the market, resetting their strategy, bringing down spending and bringing it back up again, and making sure that, you know, they can be the biggest player without kind of setting their own prices too high. And so, you know, you'll probably continue to see them do acquisitions in various ways as they kind of navigate this very complex ecosystem.
And Sean, perhaps before we wrap it up, there's a question on whether you have any thoughts on CEO Fogel's operational actions.
Does the question elaborate on that, or
not really? I guess just the general way that
our view of him as a man,
run and the management,
So he's been at Booking for a long time. You know, the Booking has performed tremendously well over time, and so we think he's doing a good job. You know, he recently took over as CEO of Booking.com. So Booking Holdings is the entire business. Booking.com is the vast majority of the business. He was the CEO of the holding company. He's now also CEO of Booking.com. And we think, you know, he's a good person to lead the company. You know, we think he's been very successful historically. You know, you look at the last 2 years and you could say, oh my gosh, things have slowed down so much. But as I mentioned, a lot of that has to do with kind of currency headwinds and macro headwinds, as well as what we think are the smart decisions that the business is making by ratcheting down some of their marketing spend and generating better EBITDA growth. So in the year, last year was the slowdown for macro reasons. The prior year you saw a slowdown in the top line, but a continued growth in the bottom line. And that's because since Google is buying their, since Booking is buying their transactions, buying their traffic, they want to make sure they spend the right amount. And you can spend less, which may slow revenue, but may enhance earnings. And so we think he's managing the business with all of the right considerations in mind.
Great. Well, we'll have to leave it there, Sean. I'll just point out a couple of things. Sean has a terrific article on the Intrinsic Investing blog of Ensemble Capital on this topic, which I would encourage everyone to take a look at. It's intrinsicinvesting.com. And secondly, I would encourage all the members listening to feel free to reach out to Sean and his team directly with any further thoughts or questions, or to contact us, and we'll be happy to facilitate an introduction. Sean, it's always a pleasure to have your insights and ideas at MOI Global. Thank you so much for your time. Truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, John, and thanks everyone who's listening in. Talk to you again another time.
Goodbye for now.